This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
South End Pier surrounded by ice floe.
Britain called the worst winter for over 250 years the Big Freeze.
I would like to call it climate change on steroids.
Lasting for 10 long weeks.
You thought, will it ever, ever end?
Temperatures below minus 22 degrees centigrade.
By God, if you needed it.
Bringing death and destruction on a vast scale.
It was estimated that 120 people had lost their lives.
About half of all our wild bird population died.
That was from BBC reporting on the Big Freeze of 1963 in the UK. Odds are increasing the United Kingdom could experience winters as cold as northern Canada. That happens if warming waters from the tropics stop flowing north in a collapse of the ocean system called AMOC, the Atlantic Meridional Overturning Circulation. In this program, you hear the latest science of AMOC from Dr. Stefan Ramsdorf. UK author and strategist Laurie Laybourne joins us. From Utrecht University, René van Westen says AMOC collapse before 2057 and an extra meter of sea level rise to boot. These are voices you need to hear. I'm Alex Smith. This is Radio EcoShock.
If the current stops, why is Britain not like Canada? Why is Scotland not frozen over? That may end if the current stops.
The AMOC is a big pump bringing warm waters northward, including in the Gulf Stream. Then it sinks into deep, cold flows heading all the way back to Antarctica. Within the last 10 years, scientists became alarmed the AMOC is weakening. Studies of past climates show AMOC has tipped before in similar warming situations. It stopped. Climate models also show it could stop again if we continue heating the planet. Dozens of scientists from dozens of countries are deeply concerned. They are raising red flags to governments and you, the public. We begin with scientist Stefan Ramsdorf explaining what we know to the Nordic Council of Ministers. Then Laurie Laybourne returns. He's with a group of scientists and strategy think tanks with a new report on a possible, quote, planetary cataclysm and weather impacts so dire in the United Kingdom that national security is threatened. In my reading of this report, it is a coin flip possibility that much of Scotland, Ireland, and Britain will grow closer to Ice Age times, even as the rest of the world overheats. Southern Scandinavia would feel more Arctic, Norwegian ports would freeze over for months, agriculture across the region could collapse. As we will hear, the impacts don't stop there. Rainfall across the world would change with the sea currents, possibly affecting the monsoon rains that feed Africa and India. Fisheries and natural systems could change or collapse. It is also possible this AMOC tipping point could trigger others, starting a big cascade of climate shifts beyond adaptation, really, beyond our comprehension. If the North Atlantic overturning stops, ending heat transfer to Europe, that could be the biggest single shock of climate change. It would be the biggest news in all of human history. There is at least a 40% chance, some say higher, the AMOC could collapse this century. We don't know when. It could start in the next few years or maybe decades, or even stranger, the tipping point may already be behind us. All we know is every year of record greenhouse gas emissions like 2023 and 24 makes this massive change in ocean currents more likely and coming sooner. The strongest voice on AMOC collapse is Dr. Stefan Ramsdorf from the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research, or PIC. In October 2024, Stefan Ramsdorf gave a 15-minute wrap-up of new science and terrible concern over the risks of North Atlantic currents weakening or even stopping. This was at a meeting of Nordic Council ministers in Reykjavik, Iceland. He then presented an open letter by climate scientists to the Nordic Council of Ministers. This is a moment reminding me of 1988 when James Hansen told Congress the world was heating up due to our fossil fuel emissions. Now again, governments threatened by a massive change to their climates have been directly notified by the top scientists working in the field. It also tells us this is not just a pet project for Stefan Ramsdorf or the Potsdam Institute. I went over the list of 44 scientists signing the letter of concern. Naturally, they are heavily from places fearing an AMOC change, like countries around the Baltic, Scandinavia, and the UK. But well-known scientists from the United States, like Michael Mann, from Australia and China and more, all warn this big change is becoming more possible as we heat the world. Here is the unedited talk in Reykjavik by Stefan Ramsdorf to the Nordic ministers. Ramsdorf is a physicist and physical oceanographer by training. He worked on Atlantic currents and climate since the 1990s. He admits that for years he underestimated how soon this could arrive. Here we have the best, clearest summary of what we know. Everyone in the world needs to hear this.
Yes, hello everyone. Fantastic to be here with such a great audience. It's a great honor. What you see here, this is what is happening in the last decades in the oceans around surrounding us. And the one striking thing you immediately see is this so-called cold blob, an area which has been cooling over the past decades. But I want to also point out another feature, and that is a region of excessive warming along the North American coast. And now these data show this for the time since we have satellite data since 1993, but we also have data going back longer in time. Here's a data set showing the trend since 1940, and we see exactly the same picture, the cold blob and the excessive warming in along the American coast here. And also data starting in the 19th century show the same thing, and in fact this cold blob is the only part of Earth that has been cooling since the 19th century, while the entire rest of the planet has warmed. So what's going on there? Now, this has to do with the AMOC, as you might have guessed, because it's in the title of my talk. And the AMOC is an overturning circulation along the whole length of the Atlantic with a warm surface flow starting from South Africa going right up to the high northern latitudes. There the water gives off its heat to the atmosphere, thereby gets colder and thereby dense enough to sink down to depth of 2,000 to 3,000 meters, where it returns as a cold current shown in blue here to the south. And that works like a central heating system, as the minister has already referred to. It transports a huge amount of heat into the high northern latitudes, equivalent to about 50 times the energy use of humanity. And sometimes this is confused with the Gulf Stream, and that is because the AMOC flows along the Gulf Stream part of the way, but it contributes only 20% of the water flow of the Gulf Stream, but it is the majority of the heat transport to the north because of the fact that the return flow is very cold. So the temperature difference, of course, makes the net heat transport. Now, when this current slows down, that region, that cold blob region, will cool. So that is something that has been well known, predicted by models. So that is an indicator of a slowing AMOC. But also this warming along the American coast is also an indicator of a slowing AMOC. It's a bit more complicated physics on a rotating sphere. But believe me, that's a well understood phenomenon. So taken together, the cold blob and that warm part are considered a fingerprint of a slowdown in the AMOC. And the cold blob, that's not just a surface phenomenon. If you plot the heat content anomaly in the ocean down to 2,000 meters, that area stands out just the same. And so it indicates a slowing AMOC. Why would the AMOC slow down? It's because this region of the cold blob is not only cold, but it's also freshening. So the salinity is declining, and that makes the water less dense and therefore harder to sink down. Actually, in the cold blob region, the salinity now is the lowest since measurements began 120 years ago. And why is the salinity declining there? That's a result of global warming. We enhance the water cycle, more evaporation in the subtropics, more precipitation into the high latitudes. Then there's additional melting sea ice, melting glaciers, melting Greenland ice sheet, all contributing fresh water, diluting the ocean waters there, and slowing down the AMOC. Now, the AMOC has a very powerful effect on climate, and you can see that in a model if you shut the AMOC down. You can do that by dumping a lot of fresh water in the North Atlantic, then the overturning stops, the AMOC dies down, and then you get this kind of temperature change pattern. First of all, you see a really shocking cooling in the Nordic seas, 20 degrees Celsius in annual mean temperatures. But you can also see the entire Northern Hemisphere cools, the entire Southern Hemisphere warms. And that, of course, is not a future projection. This is just the effect of the AMOC alone. I will later come to the effect when combined with global warming. One thing we know from paleoclimate is that there have been some of the most abrupt and striking temperature changes, climate changes in the paleoclimate record have been caused by instabilities in the AMOC. This shows in blue Greenland ice core data for 60,000 to 10,000 before present, and in the green sediment data. And I have studied these abrupt glacial climate events since the 1990s, so I could give you an hour-long talk on those. But here, I don't have time for that. And let me just say that the concern about instability of the AMOC actually originated from paleoclimatologists. I'm thinking, for example, of the famous American oceanographer Wally Broca, who warned that climate change would not necessarily proceed smoothly, but there could be disruptions of ocean circulation and so on. Now, if we look into the future, this is what the high-warming IPCC models predict for 2100. It's straight from the IPCC report, and you see again this cold blob here, and in the models, of course, it is due to the global warming, as I have explained, and you can see here the cold blob actually expands in these scenarios, cooling down Ireland, Scotland, for example. So models, at least part of them, predict this kind of thing happening, but generally the models underestimate the cold blob until now. So this is again also straight from the summary for policymakers from IPCC, and on the left you see the observed cold blob, and on the right-hand side, what the models predict until now if you drive them with historic emissions data. And you don't see the cold blob, you see just a somewhat reduced warming. And so this is one indication that the climate models are underestimating this problem. There's also a whole subsection of the scientific literature on AMOC arguing that the models have an AMOC that is inherently too stable. And there's additional factors like the climate models still haven't got interactive Greenland ice sheets, so they don't include the growing meltwater influx from Greenland, for example. We can also turn to paleoclimate data. These are seven different studies with proxy data from sediments, from corals and other things. So very different data sources, different scientific teams, and of course, different time resolutions. But all these reconstructions of AMOC for the last 1,000 or more years agree on one thing, that it's been relatively stable until in the last 100 years or so, it's in steep decline. Now, that in itself, of course, that's causing this cold blob, and that already is affecting our weather and is in itself a problem. But the even bigger problem comes through the fact that the AMOC has a tipping point. And what is this tipping point? It's demonstrated here, the green curves show the stable equilibrium strength of the AMOC as it depends on how much fresh water is flowing into the northern Atlantic. So when you start with the present climate there on the top branch where you have the AMOP flowing as we know it, and you add fresh water, you're moving along on the right, and you see this decline of the AMOP gets steeper and steeper, and then the curve bends back on itself. And that is a tipping point. Mathematically, it's a bifurcation point, and it results from an amplifying feedback, which is well understood. This is understood since Henry Stommel, another very famous American oceanographer, described this feedback system in 1961. And the feedback is such that if you add some fresh water, the AMOC gets weaker, but that means the AMOC itself transports less salty water from the subtropics, where it's salty because of evaporation there, to those high latitudes. That makes it even fresher, the water, weakening the AMOC more. So that's an amplifying feedback system. And these are always behind the physical tipping points in the climate system, because these amplifying feedbacks at a certain point become so self-reinforcing that you don't have to push the system anymore. It will basically go over the cliff there where there's no more stable equilibrium with an AMOC, and then it basically collapses. So that is that tipping point. And also the IPCC has issued quite a stern warning about the tipping points in general, namely saying that the risk associated with large-scale singular events or tipping points transition to high risk between 1.5 and 2.5 degrees warming. Below 1.5, it's moderate risk, not low. So that is a real problem, and it's one of the reasons why we should really try to stay as close to 1.5 degrees as possible. A new study that is still a preprint that hasn't been peer-reviewed yet shows that what happens with those climate models that have continued beyond 2100. That's not been shown in the IPCC report. There's around about 30 of these models, and 9 have, since the IPCC, continued their runs further into the future. And for high emissions, that is the red curves, all 9 of these collapse the AMOC. And you can see that here. It happened already by 2100. They're well on the way to collapse, but the last bits happen after 2100. And even some of the moderate emissions or low emission scenarios, some of those models also get a collapse in AMOC, despite the fact that probably these models have a too stable AMOC. And what is of particular concern is that the tipping point for a full collapse is most likely already passed much earlier in this century, probably even in the first half of this century. The consequences once the AMOC is collapsed in a globally warmed world look something like this. In the top panel, you see then the annual mean surface temperature changes, and you know the planet warms, the northern Atlantic region cools. The exact location of that cold patch depends, of course, on how much warming there is compared to the AMOC collapse, how far along are we already with warming, how early does the AMOC collapse, and so on. But the bottom panel shows changes in rainfall patterns, and we also know those from paleoclimate. There have been drastic changes every time the AMOC collapsed during the last ice age along the tropics, because the tropical rainfall belts, they shift south when the northern hemisphere cools and the southern hemisphere warms. But of course, here in this part of the world, we are mostly concerned about this. And I sometimes get asked by journalists, well, isn't that great, say, in northern Germany, the two effects just compensate? But that's an illusion, of course, because that's only in annual mean. But we don't have ever annual mean conditions out there. We have weather, and it varies depending on whether we have cold air from the north or warm air from the south. And the contrast will be much greater. And these contrasts drive storms, they drive extreme events. So if you have southern Europe warming and northern Europe cooling, that's really bad news for extreme events. And there are also other consequences for CO2 uptake by the ocean, which normally with the AMOC gets drawn down into the deep sea by the deep water formation. The oxygen supply for the deep sea comes with this deep water formation. There are big sea level changes in response to an AMOC collapse. So there are many very serious problems. And to finish off, I want to point to that big report on global tipping points published last year by more than 200 researchers from over 90 organizations in 26 countries, which concluded that harmful tipping points in the natural world pose some of the gravest threats faced by humanity. Their triggering will severely damage our planet's life support systems and threaten the stability of our society. So my conclusions are the AMOC is weakening. I think very strong evidence for that. The AMOC has a tipping point, well understood since the 1960s and confirmed again and again with more and more complex models. But the billion-dollar question is, how close are we to this tipping point, and will we maybe push it over the edge already in the next few decades? And recent studies have really given certainly me the impression that this risk is much greater than we thought just 5 years ago. And this is why a group of AMOC experts has come together to write an open letter to the Nordic Council of Ministers, which points out to that risk and says, please take this very seriously. We need more risk analysis. And most importantly, we hope that the Council of Nordic Ministers uses its diplomatic clout that it certainly has in the world to push for more deep and stringent and rapid emissions reductions. And I'm very grateful that I have the opportunity here today to hand this letter to the Climate Minister Thorhildsson. And thank you very much for receiving this and passing it on to your Nordic Minister colleagues.
That was Dr. Stefan Ramsdorf from the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research speaking to the assembled Nordic Council of Ministers in Reykjavik, Iceland in October 2024.
Radio EcoShock.
Is the United Kingdom facing a climate collapse like nothing in human history? Laurie Leyburn is a visiting professor at the University of Exeter's Global Systems Institute and at both Chatham House and Institute for Public Policy Research. He appears often in European publications, TV, and radio. From the UK, Laurie Leyburn, welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
It's very good to be with you.
In October, you and eight co-authors released a report called The Security Blind Spot, Cascading Climate Impacts and Tipping Points Threaten National Security. Say security and we think armies, weapons, anti-terrorism. As an introduction, why is climate change a pressing national security issue?
I think the way to think of this is to think back to the COVID-19 pandemic. One of the main things that COVID did was remind us that our security, the security of our communities, of our countries, of the whole world, is dependent not just on what governments call malicious action, not just acts of terror or war. The threats to security also come from diseases. In the case of COVID, that threat stressed our economies. It stressed our society's cohesion. It stressed our government. Everything was stressed. This was the greatest threat to global security since the Second World War, and it didn't come from any war. And so when we think of security, we need to expand our understanding of that beyond malicious action like terrorism and war, and think about the threats to that security coming from the consequences of the misuse and abuse of nature. Back then, a pandemic, now increasingly climate change.
Well, let's bring this to life for listeners. Laurie, could you describe events with climate-driven roots that destabilize food and then society in the United Kingdom?
We've had an example of this recently. Like many countries around the world, Britain has suffered from an inflationary shock. Prices have increased very rapidly, and that's really squeezed people's pockets and caused a cost of living crisis. A big factor playing into that inflation, into that increase in prices, has been the price of food. And evidence shows that as much as a third of the increase in food prices has resulted from climate causes. So extreme weather events, floods and storms and drought have impacted various crop-growing regions, both in Britain and in Europe. And the effects of that have knocked into each other have added up to something greater than the sum of their parts. And that has led to as much as a third of the food price increases in Britain being connected back to those climate extremes.
Picking a case study from your new report, the risk of collapse of ocean currents in the North Atlantic is too huge to imagine. Some of our listeners know about AMOC, the Atlantic Meridional Overturning Circulation. Could you give us a brief explanation of what that is?
So think of it like a great conveyor belt moving warm water northwards up the Atlantic. So the warm water in the tropics around the equator is moved on the surface of the ocean northward until it reaches the far North Atlantic, where then it releases that heat and the water sinks into the abyssal depths of the ocean, into the depths, and then it travels south again like a conveyor to then rise to the surface at the equator and pick up that heat and move northward again. It is one of the reasons why Britain has vineyards at roughly the same latitude as Canada has polar bears. It's like a big sort of central heating system for the Atlantic region and the wider world.
And new science about ocean current collapse, both past and future, seems to come out pretty well monthly. Are you familiar with the new paper from Utrecht University researcher René van Westen about AMOC collapse impact?
Yes, and this is the paper that is showing the potentially huge drops in temperature as a result of AMOC collapse.
Yes, and they found he was thinking it would happen over a 100-year period. Others are not so sure, but North Europe could drop 10 degrees Celsius. So London might go as low as minus 40 degrees in February, for example. That's hard to comprehend.
It is hard to comprehend. I mean, this would be a profound reorganization of how the climate works in those places. And what I am particularly worried about is the research that's been done to look at the consequences for, say, food production. So a paper by colleagues at the University of Exeter showed that as a result of the cooler conditions, the far colder conditions, as well as the fact that an AMOC collapse could also make these places drier, it could effectively eradicate crop growing across the British Isles. And those severe effects, those threats to food, go beyond just Britain. And a paper that was commissioned for the OECD, the rich countries think tank, anticipated that the effects of AMOC collapse combined with the other effects of climate change that would be happening alongside it could lead to the loss of well over half the suitable growing area for wheat and for maize or corn, others call it corn, across the world. And that is an outcome that the OECD described as catastrophic for the global food system, and I think that does a reasonable job of summarizing the threat there.
Yes, here on Radio EcoShock, we talked with scientists working on this, like Lefke Caesar and Suzanne Ditlevsen and Johannes Lohmann, and they were looking for early warning signs that the North Atlantic overturning system is failing. Was your team able to evaluate these warning signs?
So we looked at the existing evidence that we've got, and we looked at it from the perspective of a risk assessor. A risk assessor is a profession that exists in all sectors. Think of an aviation manufacturer. They have risk assessors that are trying to basically rule out the worst cases. And when they look at that information, they have to be sure that they can, well, rule out those worst cases. And the evidence that we have seen, particularly from the latest Earth system science, some of which you've mentioned, is, well, twofold. One, we cannot rule out the potential collapse of AMOC over the course of this century. And second, there is growing evidence to suggest that the trigger point in which collapse could start is far sooner than we realized. And this was hammered home a couple of weeks ago in the middle of October this year, when the leading Earth system scientists who focus on this issue wrote a joint letter to the Nordic Council of Ministers, the big Nordic meeting point for their government, saying this should no longer be considered as something that is very, very low probability, and it is time to take this threat extremely seriously.
Well, with what we know so far, what would you say the odds are of an AMOC collapse this century?
Well, I'm not an Earth system scientist, so I would point to those who have the greatest expertise here. One scientist who is particularly well respected and in many ways is one of the world-leading AMOC scientists is a scientist called Professor Stefan Ramsdorf. He used to say that he thought the chances of collapse occurring this century are 10% or less. He now says he thinks it's 50-50. He thinks it's a coin toss. And I think that's quite a remarkable change and one that is consistent across a number of people who look at AMOC. So for me, to be honest, even if we thought that the probabilities were as low as, say, 10%, that is in no way reassuring, because even a 10%, even a 1%, even a 0.1% chance of something catastrophic happening to the global food system is too high. If you were to get on a plane and the pilot radioed at the beginning and said, oh, and just to let you know, there is a 1%, 10%, 50% chance that this plane could abruptly fall out of the sky, we would not tolerate that level of risk. And I do not think that we should tolerate that level of risk in the Earth system. But it is the case, effectively, implicitly, and I think unbeknownst to many world leaders, it is the case that actually we are currently, as far as we know, tolerating that level of risk in the Earth system.
Well, this big change wouldn't be instant like in the movie The Day After Tomorrow. Do we have guesses on how long collapse would take, how much time there might be for adaptation or migration, if that's necessary, if it tips?
Yeah, so that's quite right. So I think a good thing for those who are listening, an image to have in their mind is a chair. And imagine you're leaning back on that chair. I used to do it at school a lot, and my teachers would tell me off. And you reach a point where you are no longer able to hold yourself in balance as you lean back. That is the tipping point. After that, you cannot help but fall onto the floor on your back. As you're saying with AMOC, the falling process where you lose control and the chair then tips down, for AMOC collapse to play out could take decades. It could take upward of a century. We don't know. Not knowing is highly unreassuring. But we should therefore look at the riskiest case, that it could be a matter of decades, which time this could play out. That would allow for some action to be better adapted. But I really would put AMOC collapse into the category of things that are unmanageable and therefore must be avoided. There isn't much going back from the kind of impact on the food system that's being suggested by the evidence. It wouldn't just be the immediate consequences of that loss of food production, it would then be the knock-on, the cascading consequences. Not just the loss of food, it's then the economic and geopolitical instability, the health effects, the knock-on effects for nature. They will create an impact that is far greater than the sum of its parts. So we've got to make sure that we avoid this unmanageable event. Climate change is not just about the floods in Spain or the hurricanes in America. It is about those things. They are awful. But it is also about the potential for the global food system to be hit by a catastrophic event by this. And this is why scientists have been calling this an emergency and why we must see it as an emergency.
So would the impact of a North Atlantic stoppage be limited to the Atlantic, to North Europe and Scandinavia?
No. It would be a global cataclysm. I don't think we should describe it anything but that. It is a major part of the global climate system. And it would have all sorts of impacts across the world. Let me just give you one example. It would severely disrupt all tropical monsoons. So we're seeing a situation in which that critical weather pattern, the monsoon in places across Africa and across Asia and India and so on, they would be dangerously disruptive, and the knock-on consequences for billions of people would be severe.
We will be right back with more on AMOC collapse and climate security in the UK with Laurie Leybourne. Then it's off to Ireland. Stay tuned.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.
This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
You are tuned to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. Our guest is UK researcher, author, and strategist Laurie Leybourne. He led the latest report, The Security Blind Spot. Well, new to me in your report, you find a subset of the AMOC current that is also vulnerable to weakening or even stopping. Please introduce us to the SPG, the subpolar gyre.
So this, as you say, is a part of that conveyor belt of the AMOC. And it's a part of it where the water sinks deep. The technical term is deep convection in the North Atlantic subpolar giant. But scientists call the potential for this to break down, they call it SPG collapse, to echo the AMOC collapse. And the evidence shows that this subset of the AMOC could collapse. It could break down far sooner and indeed far quicker than the overall AMOC collapse. And there is growing evidence to show that the risk of that is pretty high at this moment.
Yes, but the SPG is extremely large whirlpool hundreds of miles away from the coast of the UK or Ireland, and part of it swirls near Labrador, Canada. How can that affect weather and agriculture in the UK?
It's because it is a key part of that process that balances the whole regional climate across the North Atlantic region. So it's a crucial part of that process by which heat is brought up and released over that entire region that you're describing. So if it were to break down, if it were to no longer be working, it would severely disrupt the ability for that heat to exist across the North Atlantic region.
And your report warns we are flying blind on the SPG, and it may even have already tipped. And our guest scientist from Australia, Dr. Matthew England, published similar warnings about the weakening of the Antarctic overturning circulation. He said that might have tipped. I wish more scientists in the North would include this global current change in threat estimates for collapse of AMOC. Aren't they all connected?
They are all connected. And it is striking to me that there has not been the level of investment into the risk assessment of these things that is commensurate with the scale of threat that they pose. Hundreds of millions is spent by governments on risk assessing numerous things, including, say, terror threats. And I'm not contesting that, but it is clear to me that if something like SPG collapse happened, or goodness forbid, AMOC collapse happened, they would lead to far greater negative impacts than many of the threats that governments are looking at, and therefore it requires the investment to better understand the connections between them. And also the early warning systems. You pointed there to the fact that we cannot rule out that some of these systems might already have been tipped. We don't necessarily notice huge signs of that, in that we might anticipate far colder extremes to be occurring, say, in Britain and then Western Europe right now if SPG had collapsed. But the fact that we don't have the early warning systems to even know if the process has started is very concerning, to say the least. It would be equivalent to, in late 2019, as the COVID pandemic was beginning to spread globally, it would be the equivalent of us not having the early warning systems that the World Health Organization had, for example. And that's why we think it's proportionate to say we are flying blind into the threat of these ocean circulation collapses and indeed other major climate threats.
Well, these are dangerous odds of big threats, but that's not really what the UK government is telling the public so far. If I ask the Met Office, they say a collapse is an unlikely possibility. And they cite another government-funded study that reviews North Atlantic science and finds, quote, no clear overall trend in the AMOC. What do you make of officials that seem to be downplaying the AMOC threat so far?
Well, I think, and this kind of gets to the heart of the way we talk about climate risk. So I don't think that officials and many technical analysts are necessarily downplaying the threat. They are using a language that is appropriate for their particular community, that their particular community uses. So, for example, let's take another technical organization, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC. In the past, it has said, it no longer says this, but in the past report, it said that the chances of an AMOC collapse occurring this century are very unlikely, and that it had medium confidence in that statement. Now, to a climate scientist, they know the technicalities of that language, but to a politician or a national security risk assessor, they don't necessarily know the subtleties there. And the subtleties are this: by very likely, what the IPCC was meaning was that there was up to a 10% chance of collapse. And by saying medium confidence, it meant, well, hang on a minute, this is highly complex. We don't necessarily have the tools to understand this in the way we might like. So we don't have huge confidence over this. But that shouldn't be reassuring, because not knowing could mean the situation is far worse. And indeed, when we do risk assessment, we might be prudent to assume it could be far worse. So there's a clash of language, a cultural context that is often missing. And that's really important to get over. A different way maybe to frame or to repeat back what the IPCC was saying then was, we cannot rule out AMOC collapse occurring this century, or to maybe make it even better, we cannot rule out an event that could eventually lead to the loss of well over half of the growing area for the two crucial global crops underpin the global food system. So there is this sort of a lack of translation, a lack of cultural understanding between these different approaches to language and risk assessment.
But the UK government does have a climate change risk assessment. Are you saying that does not currently include any security risks?
It does include some risks we could say are related to security, things like worsening storms and heat waves and so on. The climate change risk assessment that is done, and we're now, the fourth edition is being worked on, is extremely useful and indeed in many ways world leading. The UK government uses it to then inform its adaptation planning and has done now for many, many years. But it is not a national security risk assessment in the sense that it looks at the overall picture of what climate change could do to the country. A good example of this is that the questions that we need to ask when it comes to those security threats are, well, what is the worst that climate change could do to our food supply? And how would that interact with geopolitics and trade and competition between China and Russia? And how might it affect the Russia-Ukraine war if there was a major food, a breadbasket shock, an extreme weather event to the food-growing areas in Ukraine? These are the kind of big security questions that, through no fault of anyone, are out of the scope of the current climate change risk assessment. So we think it's proportionate to have a more security-focused one as well to complement it. And there are instances of that happening around the world. A good example for the UK is that the Labour Party has just won the general election here. That happened in the summer. Australia's Labour Party won in 2022. And when they came into government, they commissioned two types of risk assessments for climate change. One is very similar to the British climate change risk assessment that looks at the process by which climate change will lead to flooding and storms to inform how it's going to adapt its infrastructure. But it did another one that Britain hasn't done yet, which was a national security risk assessment of climate change. And we think it's about time for Britain to do that similar exercise as well.
We know the American Pentagon studied climate threats and maybe possible climate weapons. They did this even during Republican oil-friendly governments. What about the British military establishment? Maybe are they ahead of their own government on climate security risks?
In my experience, defense departments and militaries, yes, are ahead of some parts of government. I think that's a natural consequence of their mandate, which is longer term. For example, decisions about investment in various equipment like naval ships, aircraft carriers, they are decisions that are made now but a government will live with for decades, in some cases maybe a century, dependent on the reuse of that equipment over time, it's sold to other nations and so on and so forth. So naturally they are thinking in longer time cycles, and they also think at the strategic level of how the world and the context for their work might shift. But we have to be slightly careful about how, as we better understand the security threats of climate change and act on them, we don't just think of that through the lens of defense, which goes back to what we talked about first in this discussion, which is that with COVID-19, things like pandemics were, of course, part of the context, the potential threats, the risks that militaries were picking up about around the world in the lead up to COVID. But in the actual advent of COVID, militaries didn't have a huge role to play. They played an important role in Britain, like other nations. They played a logistical role, effectively a humanitarian role. They helped move equipment and ensure that the country's response was as effective as possible. But beyond that tactical role, there wasn't a huge amount they could do because it required a strategy that included public health and public finances and economic stability and on and on and on. And we have to think of the climate security threat in a similar way. We might need militaries to provide logistical support, to play a role in horizon scanning future threats. But at the end of the day, this is an economic strategy issue. This is a political and social cohesion issue, and on and on. And it's that level of security planning, a grand strategy to survive the climate crisis that we now sorely need.
Laurie, what are next steps for this alarming threat that you report, and do you hope for better with the relatively new government led by Prime Minister Starmer?
I think that that government is off to a good start. It has put security and civil resilience, by that I mean the resilience of our society in the whole, at the top of its agenda. When the government came in, our public inquiry over here into the COVID-19 pandemic released a report that said similar things about COVID that we're saying about climate, to be honest, that the assessment and preparedness to the pandemic threat, that there were big gaps in what the government was doing, and there are similar gaps with climate change. And the government has said it will respond by undertaking a national review of its resilience policies. And we think that's a really good starting point for this new government. To overcome the failures of previous governments. So I feel more than ever we have the opportunity to really put resilience and human and ecological security at the forefront of our approach to climate change in the UK. And that's partly because we lived through, in some ways, a dry run, a very tragic, very damaging dry run of the type of destabilising society-wide international shocks that climate could bring. That was COVID, and governments saw their shortcomings during that, and we have an opportunity to overcome them for climate change now.
Laurie, what is the Strategic Climate Risks Initiative?
This is a part of the work that we're doing around this agenda going forward. The idea of the Strategic Climate Risks Initiative, or SCRI, is to look at what we could characterise as the next chapter of the climate crisis. It is an even more difficult one. It is a chapter in which more of these security risks will manifest. It's one in which tipping point risks will grow. Some tipping points might even be triggered. And the world will increasingly head over the 1.5 degree temperature limit. That doesn't mean that we have lost, as it were. It does not mean that the climate change has overcome us or that the action is futile. In fact, the opposite. It just means that the strategic context for that work is becoming more difficult. In some ways, you could think of it like a ship heading towards a storm. The best thing to do is to change your bearing and sail around. But that didn't happen. So now the ship is in the storm. The world is in the climate crisis. And you've still got to change the bearing and sail away. But your ability to do that has to contend with the impacts of the storm on the boat. We're going to have to navigate increasingly severe climate shocks. They're already here. They will get worse. And we have to improve our ability to spot them and to make sure our societies are resilient. So ultimately, we can stay focused on decarbonizing no matter what climate change throws at us. So ultimately, we managed to navigate out of the literal and figurative storm.
From the UK, we've been talking with author and strategist Laurie Leyburn. He led the new report, The Security Blind Spot, Cascading Climate Impacts and Tipping Points Threaten National Security. You can find that at www.ippr.org, ippr.org, or use the link in my own show blog at ecoshock.org. The report is really readable, and I think everyone should take a look. Laurie, thank you for sharing time and insight with our listeners.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you.
For Radio EcoShock, I'm Alex Smith.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
On RTE Radio, Philip Boucher-Hay explains expectations and impacts in Ireland.
For us, and it turns out there is a date for the tipping point, one that is in relative terms very close. It's 2057, so 33 years hence. And Philip is here. Good morning, Philip.
Good morning.
So what may happen in 2057?
Well, what'll happen is frustratingly difficult to put your finger on the specifics of, but in big, broad brushstrokes, all of the calculations change for us. We're currently one of the countries, or considered to be one of the countries, that will be less badly affected by climate change. Some people have referred to us as a lifeboat island. Somewhere like New Zealand, that people would try and migrate to. But if what these scientists that you're about to hear from have got right, and nobody has proven them wrong to date, well, then all of those calculations change completely, and we're actually one of the more vulnerable nations in the world. You could put us into the sort of the category of one of those at-risk island nations like Micronesia or Tuvalu or the Marshall Islands. Because if things were to progress just getting hotter and sea levels rising, well, then Ireland would be one of the less affected places. But there are wild cards in the pack. There are these tipping points, all of which have a cascading effect and can accelerate this whole process. And the one tipping point that is most immediately of concern to us is the slowing down, the eventual stopping of the overturning circulation in the Atlantic. I've seen one estimate that was to say that if we were to turn off that overturning circulation tomorrow, just like that, that waters at the equator would become 20 degrees Celsius warmer and waters at the northern latitudes would become 20 degrees Celsius colder, effectively iced over, polar ice caps extending right the way down into northern Europe. Some people say that there will be a hell of a lot more rain. Others say our northern shores could ice over. Some people say that we would be talking about minus 5 degrees in summer, minus 10 degrees in winter. I think it's safe to say, though, it's going to become chaotic, an awful lot more chaotic. Producing food here is going to have to change. How we build our homes, how we heat our homes, how we transport ourselves around the country, all would change, and would change within relatively short order.
Okay, so the scientists behind this research that Minister Eamon Ryan was talking about and that you've examined now, they've tried to pinpoint this date when this might happen.
Somebody in the European Commission, in their wisdom, decided that it would be good to try and be a little bit more accurate about this date. It would be helpful. So 50 scientists from around Europe were gathered together to look at all of the tipping points, the permafrost, the Arctic ice, Greenland ice sheet, and AMOC, the overturning circulation. It actually threw back dates that were much closer to where we are now. And there was one date that just kept on coming up again, and again and again, 2057, just 33 years from now, a point where your children and my children would probably have children of their own who would be in national school. So it really is, in geological terms, the blink of an eye.
Text Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
That was Philip Boucher-Hayes on RTE, Irish Public Radio, on September 13th, 2024. The projection of AMOC tipping by 2057 comes from new science led by René van Westen in the Netherlands. Published in Science Advances in February 2024, the title is Physics-Based Early Warning Signal Shows AMOC is on Tipping Course. In addition to his 2057 prediction, René van Westen clearly explains how Atlantic current weakening or even collapse would add up to a meter, 3 feet, of sea level rise to North Europe and UK coasts. That's on its own, on top of rising seas already expected from warming and glacier melt. This is amazing and new. Here is René van Westen, PhD candidate at Utrecht University, interviewed by researcher and presenter Dave Borlas on his popular YouTube show called Just Have a Think.
Trigger the AMOC tipping event in the future. So we don't know when this happens, but when this happens, the AMOC starts to decline. And we've seen acceleration in its decline. And this takes about 100 years to go from the current state to a collapse state. And over this 100-year period, the global climate starts to shift. The AMOC actually carries a lot of heat towards northwestern Europe. And without this heat transport, northwestern Europe cools quite dramatically. This can be up to 10 degrees Celsius in some regions for northwestern Europe. If you consider particular months, for example, the February months, it can go down to minus 40 degrees Celsius over a 100-year period. So that is really spectacular, but also very worrying, of course. You also get a shift in your tropical rain bands. And in particular, what was very interesting was the Amazon rainforest region, where you saw that the seasonality completely swapped around, meaning that the wet season became the dry season and vice versa. So these are, of course, from a physical point of view, very fascinating and spectacular. But from a societal point of view, they are very worrying because society cannot adapt to such rapid changes, because 100 years may sound like a very long time, but for typical climate timescales, but also on societal timescales, it's very hard to adapt. We already having trouble adapting to the current climate change of about 0.2 degrees Celsius warming per per 10 years, per decade. And then only for Northwestern Europe, you can see some regional cooling, while the global mean surface temperature increased by about 2 degrees Celsius. But this gives these very big temperature contrasts. On the one hand, you're getting very cold winters, but the summer temperatures are still substantially higher. So the seasonality increases for Northwestern Europe. A potential or an AMOC collapse also gives 1 meter of sea level rise in the North Atlantic Ocean.
Yeah, I read that. I read sea level rise, or I think I heard Stefan Ramsdorf say it in a recent event, and I couldn't quite understand why that happened. So if you can explain that, that would be very helpful.
Yeah, so if you go, you're located, of course, in the UK, and if you go to the sea, it looks like a flat surface, right? But actually, there are a lot of slopes, but they are stretched like over 100 kilometers, so you don't see a very big slope across the Atlantic Ocean. But there is this substantial slope, and this slope is linked to the current strength. And if this current or the strength of the circulation collapses or reverses, then also the slopes need to adjust. And this adjustment of these slopes across the ocean surface that gives this additional sea level rise of 1 meter. So actually the sea level is redistributed across the globe. So only looking at temperature is simply just rushing through all the results and just only selecting a temperature, while you also need to consider precipitation, sea ice, winter storms, more extremes, additional sea level rise due to an AMOC collapse. So the list goes on. And that is only for Northwestern Europe. Then also take a look, for example, at the Amazon rainforest, where you see this shift. The Southern Hemisphere starts to warm even faster under an AMOC collapse, triggering more melt over Antarctica, destabilizing the ice sheet over there.
That was René Van Westen on Just Have a Think on YouTube with Dave Borlas. This Radio EcoShock program is not a Halloween horror show merely to get attention. If we are lucky, the AMOC or its subcurrent may only weaken. I have included cautions and doubts. Great Britain may remain great, but this invasion of cold gets more likely with every ton of carbon, indeed every gallon or liter of gas or petrol burned. Nothing in our history or psyche has prepared us for this big climate twist. It's climate action now, or we lose it all. We're out of time in more ways than one. Find a lot more notes and links to follow up in my show blog. I also include links to my previous interviews with many scientists on the AMOC collapse. I'm Alex Smith. I care about you and our world. Thank you for listening.
Gulfstream waters, nature gives, protecting climate where we live. What if the current stops our green and pleasant land? Freezes over if the current stops.